It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
I think when we look back at all of this, we'll all realize that there was a master plan for this. There absolutely was a master plan for election 2020. And we probably didn't see it coming early on, but let me just tell you right up front here, the socialist left devised a multi-pronged strategy coming into 2020 election cycle to win at all cost. I don't say that casually, and I'm not trying to be a smart guy, but listen, whatever your political stripe is, everybody has to admit, both Democrats and Republicans alike have to admit, the game plan over the last almost 4 years now has been to ruffle President Trump up and get him out of office. I mean, nobody can deny that. The Democrats cannot deny that. The Republicans cannot deny that. Every effort from the left has been for that mission alone. There's been no governing, no working together. It's just been to get him out of office. He is a threat to the establishment, and that is the game plan, and that's where we'll start today, my fellow Americans, and welcome to Viewpoint Presents. It's Malcolm here along with Michael Johns. So let me tell you, Michael, what I'm thinking in my view here, this is my words, what I think the master plan is. So coming into this election, I think it was this. Number one, they sold the lockdown to America via experts like Fauci, Birx, Gates, and the Democrat media machine more than anything. They used the pandemic to create fear and more so to pull the economy down to meet its needs. Next, they used the pandemic to foster the universal mail-in voting, knowing full well that you don't implement new election strategies right upon the heels of an election. Next off, they capitalized on George Floyd in Minneapolis and Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin, to create unrest and disturbances nationwide. And then finally, they took Democrats, mayors, and governors, and they decided to, and this is unconscionable that they would do this, they decided to stand down, and allow these hoodlums and domestic terrorists to destroy city blocks, vandalize stores and businesses, and destroy livelihoods. And all at what cost, you ask? Well, that's easy. To show that Donald Trump is out of control and can't handle the job, a much better idea with Joe Biden to turn America into a socialist nation. So, Michael, that's what I think has taken place here. I think that is a strategy, and I think they knew coming into election 2020, they were going to have to do some uncharted things, and boy, are they living up to that master plan.
Yeah, I would even go back further. I mean, if you really go back to Malcolm, back to January 2017, I mean, from the very beginning, there was no inclination to work with this president in any capacity. And the only reason that the president was so fortunate to have so many legislative accomplishments in those first 2 years is that the Republicans controlled both the House and the Senate. Since January of 19, basically, there's been no cooperation at all, no inclination to work on even the most most basic functions of a federal government that you would expect to see. And you can see that in the way this is the latest relief package has been handled, to the point where the president's had to, you know, redirect funds and find ways to get things done in the absence of the way our Constitution dictates that it's supposed to be done, only because that's the only option. And then that inevitably gets challenged in courts, which themselves have become politicized. It's a very difficult situation. You know, one final point is I spent a lot of time defending President Trump in foreign media, in part because it's part of defending America. And the inclination, particularly of our greatest enemies, is to point to this level of dysfunction and say, see, there's nothing exceptional about the United States. There's nothing great about the United States. And democracy and constitutional republic and free markets, you know, ultimately really don't work. It's up to us to demonstrate that they do, and we can't get that done with the level of partisanship that has, you know, fallen upon Washington, D.C.
Well, that there sounds like an Obama 2.0 strategy, that the transformation part and the apologizing for American values, that sounds like an Obama 2.0 deal here. You know, it seems like a lifetime ago, actually, when you just said a minute ago here, you said, well, you remember when the Republicans had the House and the Senate? And I thought to myself, well, no, I don't remember. When was that again, Michael? Exactly. You know,
I have to say, you know, let's be honest about it. Paul Ryan was not the biggest advocate or ally of President Trump, and he didn't really lift a finger on the issue of, you know, the biggest promise in the election, which was the wall funding, which put us in this predicament. You know, so it is true that, you know, the left and the Democrats are predominantly to blame, but this continues to be an issue of refining and fixing the agenda within our own party, and making sure that these issues that the president correctly brought up in 2016, which have been issues for decades, become centerpieces of our party, and that we explain in intelligent, convincing ways why they are so essential to the success and security of our country.
And then, did you happen to see the interview Wolf Blitzer did with Attorney General William Barr?
Yes. Right?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, two things I want to bring up to you on this, which I find fascinating. It was a bit combative, I think be the right word to use, between the Attorney General, who really is a straight shooter, doesn't like a lot of games. In fact, one of the strangest things coming from that, you got to chuckle about this, is when Wolf points out to the Attorney General and says, well, what do you mean the media bias? We are fair and balanced here at CNN, aren't we? And right. Did you see, oh my golly, did you see A.G. Barr's response? You know, and it's, you know, I think he missed an opportunity there actually to say something more and level the playing field, but he chuckled and smuggled and kind of moved along, but he should have actually said more then, because to me, it was an invitation.
Yeah, it should be substance. The substance on these biases are so immense. And you just start right there with the beginning of this whole Russian investigation. I mean, if you watched CNN for the first 2 years of this administration, you certainly, if you had just dropped out of the sky and landed here, and that was your only source of information, you would think surely it was only a matter of minutes or days or maybe a week until the president was, you know, removed from office for having conspired with this hostile power. I mean, they presented that continuously, day after day after day, through mouthpiece after mouthpiece. And you're really not one of those people, including Wolf Blitzer, has come forward and said, you know, what a colossal mistake we made, and what a complete disservice to the American people and to American democracy we offered. And you can't tell me that wasn't at least some factor in Republicans ultimately losing the House in 2008.
Oh, it definitely was. And by the way, this is a lot of reason, Michael, to a point to make to you and everyone, is that this is one of the big reasons why a lot of the alien life forms and UFOs also don't really believe the truth, because they also fell from the sky, like you said a moment ago, and they listened to CNN and said, oh my God, this guy really is messing up. So maybe that's part of that reason. I don't know.
Well, and we'll get to that, because I really believe, and the responsibility, you know, to be fair, it's a two-way responsibility. We have to improve discourse in this country in a complex way, because President Trump is correct that we need to be able to talk more bluntly, openly, honestly about the issues we confront. But we also need to be able to be conscious of the fact that we need to be able to work together as elected officials across ideologies. We need to be able to find common ground to work on things, or we're headed into a very, very dark place. Where this country is ultimately divided into two. And there's a lot of intelligent people who think that's the way it's going. I think it's kind of our obligation to see if that can be prevented.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that do believe that. You're exactly right. And many smart people believe that. They really believe that we've sort of gone past the point of no return kind of thing. And it's beyond any sort of reconciliation to come back to a table and discuss or talk about things. It's hard to say because there's been so much damage. You know, one of the unique things you just was talking about, too, with the president and the media. When the president started talking about the fake news and he started talking about it in the way, I don't think anybody really realized that he was onto something major and important in our nation. And I got to tell you, there's a theme that's run through the entire first hour of Viewpoint, Michael, and it's this. The media is definitely, and we know they're not just in the tank, but they are manipulating this election. We're talking the Googles and the Facebooks and the Twitters and all of them out there. They are manipulating the information, the data. Just go again, search like Bob France was talking earlier. Just do a search for the RNC and see what comes up compared to the DNC. It's a perfect case in point. And then you understand that the president has been calling this out from the beginning.
And yeah, you know, but hold it, but just pause there because yeah. I think we're beyond that now. I think we need more than just calling. We've been calling them out for a long time.
I agree.
These are either, like, are these in-kind contributions to the Democratic Party? Do these need to be registered with the FEC? Mm-hmm. Are there issues of legality here that belong in the courts? Because the time, you know, I think we've spent a good 3 years now establishing the fact that the media is biased. Academia is biased. Big tech in Silicon Valley is long gone. And in the eyes of a lot of people, those are institutions that aren't just gone momentarily, but they may never come back. The issue now becomes one, I think, of a rule of law. So, you know, if you've got so much power in those companies to potentially sway votes and they are actively engaged, as those Google executives clearly said in their Friday meeting or whatever they called it, after Trump's victory, that they were not going to allow this to happen again in 2020 and are now basically just living up to their word, right?
They're just
But I mean, what I'm saying is that we continue to, as conservatives or as, I guess, it's not even conservatives, as individuals who want objectivity in society, we continue to be shocked, repelled, appalled, terrified. They told us they were going to do this, and now they're doing
it. They did it. But let's be fair. Let's be fair, though. Hold on. I mean, yeah, what you're talking about, okay, Americans are outraged. I get it. You're outraged. I'm outraged. A lot of people listen outraged. But
that's not enough.
Well, it's not enough, but we got to rely on the lawmakers. I mean, what the hell are we going to – we got to rely on the Republican lawmakers who – I think there's the guilty party right there.
Well, let me just say this, and I've instructed many people – certainly our Tea Party movement was very much and has been and is very much rooted in reforming the Republican Party in ways that make it both politically successful and successful from a policy standpoint from advancing American interests and American values. If there's a problem within the party, we are the party. We are the you get involved, you know, on a local basis, on a state basis, on a federal basis. We've got to right the course here. And I think we've spent, I'm not kidding, maybe two decades now, because I've been in this a while and I've seen it. There's literally like organizations in Washington that just point out left-wing media bias. At what point do you go, okay, case closed, it's biased,
let's do something about it,
right? To me we're like years beyond having proven point to a jury of our peers.
Yeah,
I mean, it's so clear, and you can even see it like in polling at these media where it's like, you know, percent who voted for Hillary Clinton, 98% or something like that. And it's not even individuals anymore. This is like an organizational culture. So you envision going into, say, a typical any job, you picture whatever job you do out there, going into your place of work that has an established, say, goal or a set of principles. And just sort of try doing the opposite and see what happens. It's not going to, you know, you might get warned a few times. You might get counseled a few times. Ultimately, you're not going to be there. And I think that's where corporate media has gotten. I think we've gotten to the point where they understand what their role and what their job is. It doesn't even have to be explained to them. They're not sitting in any boardroom saying, here's how we're going to go get Trump. Everyone knows that's the game.
Number one, it's an extreme bias. It's not just a bias. It's an extreme bias. And the way they're playing
it's an agenda.
Out.
It's
a total agenda, and they are doing
because
the things
it's not
they
just
said.
Designed, yeah, because it's got goals in mind. You said it very well at the beginning. That it's a strategic plan.
Master plan. It's a master plan. You know, I don't use the word Republican a lot because I'm not in love with that. I'm more in love with conservatism. And that's more right. of where I'm at.
By the way, I think that's true of most who have principled viewpoints in the party. You kind of have the party apparatchiks, those who made a career within the Republican Party, for whom, by the way, there's way too much of that. The sort of Republican consultant who floats from campaign to campaign, who does data collection and hit ads and, makes a career out of it. But ultimately, no one's even keeping score on now half these people do. I mean, it's astonishing to me, without getting into names of people that are running major Republican campaigns in this country, who have not yet won a race anywhere in two decades. Wow. Wow. And they just keep floating along because it's like it's become a business on both sides. And it's what we most feared, that this would not be a battle of ideas on, which side could best improve the lot of the American people, but that it would become, the worst of human instinct. And that's that's the dilemma ultimately of any democracy or of any structure of government at all, is that you ultimately come down to individuals, human beings, flawed to the core, as we know they are, having to make, judgments and to make decisions and to disavow self-interest.
Yeah.
And that sadly has just, I think, been beyond the capabilities of many of the people we've been relying upon to make those judgments.
Well, all right. So we'll talk about the American people in a minute. Let me come back to that. I want to get back to that Wolf Blitzer AG Barr interchange. And let me read you this, Michael, this quote here. All right. So we're talking about this last minute change that the Democrat socialist left tried to implement with universal mail-in voting and versus of course, absentee voting, which everyone should understand the difference by now. It is a major difference. It is already in play. And now there are groups coming out that are saying that potentially there'll be a landslide election victory election night. And probably they'll try to declare Joe Biden a winner after that. But let me read this quote to you from Wolf and A.G. Barr. And this is A.G. Barr speaking now. And he says this. He said, Wolf, this is, sort of cheap talk to get around the problem, the attorney general says, which is a bipartisan commission chaired by Jimmy Carter and James Baker. Back in 2009, that said, mail-in voting is fraught with the risk of fraud and coercion. Since that time, there have been in the newspapers and networks academic studies saying it is open to fraud and coercion. The only thing the narrative changed is after this administration came in. So he put it right out there. And that, and you know this, Wolf, but Wolf kept denying it and he kept playing dumb in the interview. You've seen that, right?
Well, yeah, not only did I see it with Wolf Blitzer, but it's throughout the entire media. Every time the president, for instance, makes reference to fraud with mail-in ballots, the reporting is the president alleged without specifics or wrongly stated, which is ridiculous. I mean, here are numbers. I mean, you've got last four federal elections, 2.7 mail-in ballots were misdelivered. I'll put that in quotes, all right? Misdelivered, you know what I mean? Wink, wink.
Yeah.
13 million were rejected. Again, because we're relying on human judgment. Someone doesn't, dot a few I's correctly. It doesn't match the signature. Things like that happen. There's an entire election in Paterson, New Jersey. It was all by mail-in ballot because of the pandemic. Four residents charged with criminal fraud, including a councilman and a councilman-elect. Voters who never received ballots are recorded as having voted. One in five ballots were rejected for signatures, not matching the signatures on file. I mean, New York had its primary, essentially the same story. There is no, far from what the media are saying, that there's no evidence of voter fraud with mail-in ballots. There is no evidence of there not being fraud with mail-in ballots. I mean, you go through case after case after case. People are literally incarcerated today because of their roles in these things. And yet it's such a fundamental fact and yet completely denied.
What everybody should take away from what we're talking about right now is that, which you pointed out, I mean, basically what it comes down to, and I love the way you say, well, you know, enough is enough. When are we going to stop just talking about it? And when are we going to stop just complaining and whining about it and do something about it? And that really is the message when we're calling this all out. And what that means and what it comes down to, people, is that it really is coming down to we the people. That's who it is. That's what's left. You know, when you say all the organizations have sold out, well, that's exactly what's happened. When they all the industries and all of these are sold out. And we're talking extreme bias here. So when you do all of that math and you look at it and then you say, well, who's left? Who's left to carry this? What do you count on the Republican politicians? Well, you can't even there most of the time, which is why many times Trump is standing out there, three sheets naked in the wind blowing, because he's going against the whole establishment, which is what. So here's the key to this whole thing. The key to everything we just talked about is you have a president who stands with we the people. And that president is, that's what's going to happen now forward. And it really does come down to everybody here, everyone listening. We've got to reach people to understand that's who's in the fight here. That's who has to take this forward here. All right. Well, listen, let's take a quick pause here. And I still want to get Michael's opinion on this Hawkfish thing and what they're talking about election night, which we was a pretty heated conversation up front in the other hour. But I think it's something we need to explore. A little more detail, some interesting points to that we'll touch on just after the pause as Viewpoint Presents continues.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
All right, so you're hearing more of the stories about election night and people are getting pretty ramped up with the fact that, you know, we may not have a victor that day. I mean, we've always been accustomed in our country to, you know, being able to declare some sort of a winner the night of the election to the degree. Sometimes it's late, but typically we know what we're dealing with here. Now they're saying you may not know, but now there are some other reports, Michael, that are coming out and that are saying, well, based on the data and what we're seeing, that election night will probably show President Trump will be a landslide victory. I mean, he will have won across the board in a very big electoral win and popular vote win, too, they're saying. But the days after that, which they have all their attorneys ready to fight, they say they're going to be able to declare Joe Biden the victor. Are you getting that sense of what you're hearing out there?
Well, I mean, absolutely. If you look at that Axios HBO segment with what's his name, Josh Mendelson. I mean, this is not a big universe of people in this profession. So we don't necessarily all know each other, but we know kind of what angle people are coming from. And you think about this guy. I mean, this is his company is owned by Bloomberg. Their two biggest clients are Democratic National Committee and pro-Biden political action committees. So let me just ask you the question. I mean, when that guy sits down to offer some conjecture about the direction of things, do you think he's really providing objective analysis about what he believes will happen, or is he more likely sort of setting the path for a situation that they envision and intend to manage and micromanage. Yeah, I mean, now, you know, is there any objective indication that there's some truth to that? You go back to Gore Bush. I mean, you had 36 days, I think it was, until that was resolved, right, predominantly over the South Florida contended votes. And I think what is clear is that way too much stuff is ending up in courts. But this election, too, is just like, I think you're going to see an aggressive Democrat National Committee and Joe Biden, who's in there trying to get league in courts, including from activist judges appointed by Democrats, what they could not secure at the ballot box. That's the greatest fear of all this. You know, when we really break it down, we talk about these mail-in ballots and how the processes are working. And, you know, to me, it's all so sensible. I mean, when someone registers to vote, they should be given a voter ID. Right. I accept the fact that there are individuals in this country, particularly if you're like, say, you know, I'm up in New York City a lot. People up there don't have driver's licenses. Well, like, really, seriously, a sizable number of people just don't drive. They don't have it, you know, and they don't have ID. I accept that fact. Well, there's nothing stopping states from issuing the voter ID when the individual registers, period. And then if you put that in place, so many things would be fixed. And then the second step would just to have some interstate technical service that ensures that individuals are not registered in multiple states, as they routinely have been. And, you know, you've had indictments there, you know, too, with individuals who've literally voted in multiple states. Here's one example. John and Grace Fleming found guilty duplicate voting, once by absentee ballot in New Hampshire and then in person in Massachusetts. I mean, they literally went and did that. Mm-hmm. And fortunately were caught for it. But how many of these cases are not caught? I would say the vast, vast majority.
All right. Let's play this scenario out. So what they're suggesting is that more Republicans than not will be voting in person in their polling places. I mean, they'll be voting proper, you know, the way we always did it. And then more Democrats, they say, that are fearful of COVID and the mask thing and all that and distancing, and they will be voting through mail to whatever degree that they can. They're suggesting that is what sets this up to be the problem that it is going into the election. And then you have these governors fighting to throw all of the universal mail-in voting to mail them out to everybody and their brother. Again, there's been no simple remedy to fix this thing, as you just pointed out a moment ago, Michael. A simple voter ID system would have handled some of this. And we have weak people who are running the system who can't even fix this simple, simple thing. In a free democracy, in a government like ours, you'd think we could get the privilege of voting down so that this was a non-argument and we could have a fair election. Now we're talking about we're at each other's throats. Will the election be fair or not? That's how high the stakes are. So I think we're set for this problem election, where they put, again, they've done some signaling. They put it out there, this hawkfish, which, as you just pointed out, is a Democrat group, very clearly. And they said, well, and they've got all attorneys set up. Then you hear Hillary Clinton come out and say, well, don't concede. Joe Biden should not concede no matter what. And they've got all hundreds of attorneys waiting, probably thousands at this point. I think they're looking for a big fight here come November 3rd, November 4th, don't you?
Yeah, that Hillary Clinton statement was outrageous. I mean, again, it's the projectionism that we've talked about, her saying exactly what she was accusing
Trump.
Well,
let me play that right now.
And by the way,
folks, let's play that Hillary Clinton, right? I got it right here, man. Let's play it here.
So we've got to have a massive legal operation. And I know the Biden campaign is working on that. The force of intimidation that the Republicans and Trump are going to put outside polling places. You know, Joe Biden should not concede under any circumstances, because I think this is going to drag out. And eventually, I do believe he will win if we don't give an inch.
But just two things stand out at me here. Number one, Republicans are going to put up a force of intimidation, was that the phrase, outside of polling locations? What exactly does that even refer to? It was widely reported that she had said that Biden should hold out in the event that the election was close.
Yeah.
I went back and, you know, and I read a bunch of articles reported that way. And then you listen to what she actually said. Should not concede under any circumstances.
I mean, come on. Under that's any, what she said. You just heard it.
Those three words, under any circumstances.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you just heard it. You just heard it. So what you're saying is they tainted it and said she said something different. They twisted it, huh?
Yeah, there's media article after me. I'm not talking about small media outlets either. I'm saying like, you know, major wire services and whatnot said that Hillary Clinton said he should, you know, not concede if it's close. And then I go,
not what she said at all.
Not at all what she said.
No,
it's a much more emphatic, adamant, and authoritarian statement.
You can hear her, and you can hear the tone in which she said it, and as she was gritting her teeth and talking about it. I mean, this is a woman that is not only evil, but has a completely evil agenda. Has never gotten over any election in her life, and feels again. This is a lady who plays with Saul Alinsky in that group. I mean, she loves this whole idea of a Marxist United States of America. It's what she lives for. So how should we be surprised? We can't be surprised with these kinds of things. But you look at this whole hawkfish thing, and this is a setup all the way here. You start to look at the numbers there. They're predicting now. You're a numbers guy. You love numbers, Michael. In that Axios piece, and which, again, you mentioned already, the Bloomberg connection and the DNC and all of that here. So what they're predicting is election night. It's just interesting for people to understand. They're talking Trump may hold a projected lead of 408 to 130 electoral votes on election night. Now, that is what you call an avalanche there, if that was to happen. Now, then they're saying that, but that would only be 15% of the vote by mail. You see that in
it doesn't
story.
Even make sense. No media outlet's going to call the race with a significant number of ballots not counted. I mean, I do trust that the calling of these races, unlike the polling that leads up to them, and unlike the media coverage of the race itself, is objective. So what I'm saying, and I think that points more to my larger thesis here, is that this was not an innocuous statement. And I think you see that as well, that it's designed to sort of lay the ground in the minds of the American people that that when Trump wins, it's really not settled. There's right. some mysterious big number of votes out there somewhere that through what did Hillary say, intimidation of force, we have somehow controlled. I mean, it's so misleading. It's such a disservice to our country and to all those who fought and died for this whole principle of elected democracy and constitution. And it's really just, did you use the word evil? I mean, yeah, kind of, it's about as evil as it gets within the field.
Well, they're going to come back later on and they're going to say, we told you so. We told you so because, what did I say?
Well,
signaling. They're just signaling.
Right, and then they'll be replaying an interview with this guy that no one's heard of except for people like us, you know, from Axios on HBO. Saying, and look at the foresight that he had in projecting that this race would go exactly like this.
One other thing I got to throw at you, because you mentioned a moment ago that they were saying that the Republicans at the polling places would be problematic or what have you. Now, I seen reports the other day, and you can visualize this one, Michael, that said the radical groups, the BLM and the Antifa groups, that they are planning to intimidate, would be the word, people. Now, you can only get so close to a polling place anyways. You can't get in it or on top of it. It's illegal. But within a distance, they can do some damage on the way to the...
You can't intimidate voters no matter how far the distance.
That's right. Well, on the way to the carnival, right? I mean, on the way to the carnival, we stopped and we've seen a couple of clown circuses. And basically, they're saying that these groups... Now, I would not put that past them, would you?
I suppose not. I got to tell you, I felt the same way about the Occupy movement, is that I don't feel this is an inherently electoral focused movement. I think it's much closer to a violent and quasi terrorist movement designed to accomplish goals by decimating the status quo of our country. And I noticed with Occupy, with all the momentum and, you know, people that they turned out, that ultimately they were not at all a political force. There's not one member of Congress that I could name who's in there because of Occupy. Whereas I could give you the names of dozens upon dozens upon dozens, including household names. and maybe including the president himself, who were direct political beneficiaries of the Tea Party movement, which was focused on the electoral process and was focused on winning in a fair way these elections.
Well, we're talking about really, there's a criminal component to this is what we're really talking about, Michael. There's a criminal component. And that's been a thread running through this thing as well. There's a means to an end here of what they're trying to accomplish. And that's why there's so much uncertainty running toward this election. I mean, of all the elections you've ever been through, and you've been covering this stuff for a long time, does any one time come close to this?
No, I felt like there've been common themes throughout all of them, but they've just become more and more intense with each passing electoral cycle. One of the theories, like when you hear people speak about the state of this race, you'll never hear anyone aligned with a candidate who will acknowledge that the candidate's behind. That's always puzzled me. Like that there's somehow a benefit derived from that. I mean, you know, I think what's so wrong about just being upfront about it? You know, maybe it's motivating to people. I think a lot of the words that go into these pre-election commentaries and hypothetical plans of how things are going to play out is based on motivating certain bases of voters and demotivating others. And the only thing I can say in response to all of it is, you know, we need this president to be reelected. There's every reason to believe that this race will be close. And you absolutely must get out and vote. At a very minimum, you must do that part of it. There's many other things that can be done. But for starters, that has to be done.
That is just, listen, beautiful words you say there. Those are words of wisdom. Everybody listen. And I told you earlier in the program, in the first hour, what Michael just said. You cannot take this election for granted. No matter who's saying what, anybody who out there is saying, using words like landslide, avalanche, or whatever. Okay, that's all great in theory, whatever. If middle America rises and speaks up and they know what's happening here, even though remember now the caveat, these people are not hearing this in the mass media and in social media, they're not hearing it. So that means people have to be informed other than the headline news, which is tainted and twisted evilly so as hell. And so you see where we are in this battle here. But Michael, the point you make about voting is so important. Everybody gets that. Every vote matters here. The one thing the Republicans or the conservatives or Americans or patriots do not want to do is to take anything for granted. Every vote is going to be critical here to get to the end result. And you know what? It is an amen moment when you say there is an objective here to get President Trump elected and reelected here in 2020. And listen, we just believe that is the best course for America, not for any other reason. This isn't a popularity contest. It's nothing else. It's just the best cause here. So listen, here's what we do here. Let me just tell you all, you're listening to Viewpoint Presents. Here along with Malcolm and Michael Johns, and we have so much more to talk about. I want to get into this, the cities and the way that's being used in the COVID era with the mismanagement of the cities we're speaking about and how that's really what's held up this next relief thing that Pelosi's been trying to get money for all these cities that have been mismanaging their budgets and their city affairs for decades now. And they're trying to use this as an opportunity to bail out, which is a lot of BS. But I'll tell you what, when we come back after the pause as well, what we first want to talk to you about before that, Michael, is this really, I've got an interesting soundbite I want to play for folks to remind everybody about the what many liberals and Democrats should be guilty for, and that is paving the way for violence that you're seeing in a lot of this unrest from sea to shining sea. Stay right there, my fellow Americans, and we'll pause a moment to be back with more Viewpoint Presents in just a moment. Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives.
This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the Vision of the Voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
And if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
Yes, I am outraged. Yes, I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
This is, I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country, and maybe there will be.
So you hear there the wish list from leading Democrat operatives and politicians alike there, the wish list to talk about the violence. And then you see the uprising in all of the cities. And one of the big thoughts, Michael, we talked about early in the program, too, is really like, okay, you know, why is no? And I think a lot of people are puzzled by this, actually, is why is nobody standing up for the rule of law? Why are not these mayors and governors and others protecting a civil society, the civilians, the Americans, their homes, their businesses, their livelihoods, their lives? And yet that all falls to the same conversation when you're talking about inciting violence and the kinds of people we hear. But there's a track record of this, isn't there?
Absolutely. And, you know, the answer to your question is self-evident. It's political self-interest. And to those who say, well, there's problems on both sides and both ideologies and both parties, the one thing I can assure you is I'm not aware of any Republican governor or mayor in this country that would have 5 seconds of patience for this type of behavior that's going on in Seattle, in Portland, in New York, in Washington, D.C., in Philadelphia. It would be stopped because it's a threat to the people that they represent, to their personal survival, and to the economic.
That's so important what you say there, Michael. Michael, everybody's got to hear that. That is so important what you say. Think about it. Everybody, think about it. I mean, does anybody know
the next conclusion? The next conclusion, which is once you have concluded that your political self-interest is more important than the 15 plus individuals whose lives have been lost because this is allowed to go on, that is the definition of autocratic political behavior. The protection of American lives first and foremost is a responsibility of elected officials and those who report to those officials. I mean, that should be a no-brainer. And when you have a party that has moved so far off of the, you know, the traditional JFK reservation, that they have essentially revolution is the end game, no matter what. That's kind of like where we end up with, and that's created quite a predicament because if you are approaching this with an adherence to the Constitution and respect of the rule of law, we have a system that is somewhat constraining the federal government's abilities to actually engage in these matters. It's unprecedented, certainly. You would have to go back to the Civil War to really find anything comparable to it.
That's it. And you know it, too. Why do you think I put this point in the master plan when we started the conversation today, Michael, right? I put that in the master plan because it's part of their strategy. And this is what people need to wake up and see. Every American who loves their country or their way of life or their version of freedom needs to wake up and hear what we're saying. This shouldn't be a Democrat and Republican problem. This is an American problem. And when you see what they're allowing in your cities, in your towns, in your communities, that they are allowing to happen, which could easily be stopped, but as part of their master plan strategy to show the unrest and pin it on President Trump and this administration, there is only one reason they're doing that. And you know, Michael, as you say, no matter, as you just point out, all the deaths, and the tens and hundreds of million dollars that have been lost.
A billion.
And the businesses. A billion. And the livelihoods.
A billion.
Billion. Sure. I don't doubt it.
And going up. You know, but that's really the point here, is that when you have such a twisted political mindset that the loss of an individual life is not significant to you or not as significant as your political self-interest, what at that point wouldn't you do for the purposes of your political self-interest. And that's why my message to all these people in the streets right now is, you know, some of you are just hooligans and need to be arrested. Some of you actually may have good intentions. And there are, I think we would concede some points that we've drawn from this, right? I mean, we've looked at the world a little differently since Minneapolis. I have, certainly. Mm-hmm. I've always known this to be an issue, but it's, you know, let's I'll give some credit to that. Those people running those cities are going to forget about you. They do not care about you. They are not going to address your issues. Their self-interest will come first and foremost, which is why in Chicago, they will allow the street gangs to tear up Michigan Avenue. But when they get on the street of the mayor, police units will be called and they'll be called off immediately. That's interesting, isn't it?
Well,
wasn't that sort of the same sort of mindset that, look, I don't care if even the most high-end stores and yeah. One of the economic foundations of one of America's greatest cities is torn to shreds.
That's right.
Let that happen on my watch. But if they get on my street, oh, no, that's not going to happen.
Well, the hypocrisy is off the charts. I mean, it's off the charts everywhere you look. It's hypocrisy at the greatest level. And, you can't make this stuff up, obviously. It is so out there, what we're talking about. All right, as we talk about this now, Michael, let's take, so we don't lose this here, I want to talk about the budgets in the cities, because it's a very interesting point here. And I've seen one of the news reports this past week here, where de Blasio, the New York City clown there, he says that they plan to sue the Trump administration if it withholds federal funds from New York City specifically, yeah? And is what he's putting out there. Now, what are your thoughts on that and where we stand in our country with these budgets that Pelosi is trying to push through with a COVID relief plan? I don't think all Americans really understand what's going, which is why they haven't received their relief, their stimulus relief, whatever you want to call it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have a few moving parts here. I mean, you've got the next stimulus package, which Pelosi is not working on. I mean, Literally... You saw she's off in San Francisco getting her hair done. That's how important your problems, America, are to this woman. I thought that's actually a nice symbolic gesture of that.
Yeah.
And simultaneously, we have this issue of what do you do in the case of at least four cities, maybe half a dozen even, that have become absolute bodies of anarchy. You know, as the President of the United States, what are your options available? Well, the first reasonable option is the one that I think the President has taken with this memorandum to all of the agencies to identify opportunities where funds can be redirected away from the four cities he identified, which was New York City, Washington, D.C., Seattle, and Portland. He's also instructed Attorney General Barr to develop a full list of what's appropriately called anarchist jurisdictions. And so that list of four cities could very possibly grow or even double. And, you know, you look at New York City, let's just take that as an example, right? The largest kind of city in our country takes a $1 billion, $1 billion out of a $6 billion NYPD budget, right? That's, what is that, like 17% or so? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an extraordinary cut.
Yeah.
And they disbanded their plainclothes units, which were so critical for their undercover work on particularly violent crimes and serious drug crimes. And the results are like self-evident, okay? So July, 177% in shootings in the five boroughs in New York City.
It's off the charts.
Yeah, and so you get to a point where you're the federal government. You can't have this happen. You have a mayor who clearly, like, you don't even do. Are you hearing any remorse from him about it?
You don't hear any of it, but the president's limited to what he can do.
You're not even hearing. You know, sometimes you got bad option one and bad option two, and you make the least the decision that's the least worst.
Right, right.
But you at least acknowledge the complexity of the decision. To me, this was a no-brainer.
What?
But you don't even see any – well, this was a no-brainer to actually – I would have said increase police funding.
Oh, yeah, yeah, anything. Yeah, yeah. Easy,
because,
easy.
I mean, just from a standpoint, I think one of the dilemmas here is we have law enforcement stretched thin.
Yeah.
And when they're working excess hours and they're being – you know, they're moving between multiple jurisictions and –
Well, no. They're in court defending their lives because they're being charged for murder.
Right. And they're not making a lot of money. And it's a stressful job. And you put anybody in those situations, the percentage of a negative development happening is going to go up, not down. An error of some sort.
But that's what they want.
Right?
That's what they want. That's the whole unrest.
I understand. Yeah. Well, you said it. I mean, are we facing a strategic plan? We're facing a vast, vast strategic plan that probably exceeds, you know, the strategic plans of the biggest companies in the world.
That's so well said. I got to ask you a question. Let me ask you something. Within all these cities, we talk about what the president can and can't do. All right. So you wonder, like, where's the point where people say uncle? Like, how much is too much? And you're seeing a lot of these cities and communities where it's night after night after night after night. And you feel for the people, you feel for the civilians, you feel for the residents, for the business owners, and for the people who are taking the hit on this thing. But of course, they're the people who've elected these people to office. And maybe they realize now, I don't know, maybe they've come to their reason to think that they shouldn't have put a Wheeler in office or a Durkin or whatever, a Blasio or whoever these mayors are. They're atrocious people. They're little Marxists. Little Plato people. But with all that said, the question that came up early is, what can the president do? And, you know, it was said earlier in the program that potentially they've been baiting the president to get him to try to do the Resurrection Act of 1807. It was pointed out so that they say, ha-ha, we gotcha. There's the dictator-in-chief in charge right now. What do you think of that? Do you think that's the strategy?
That is the word. That is the adjective they want to attach to him. You hear it over and over again. Yeah. You played a few of those quotes that I think laid the ground for this violence. That's my position. I think one of the biggest responsibilities of any position of public leadership is restrained rhetoric and reinforcing that there's no room for violence. And yet you've got case after case after case of major elected officials, media figures, and entertainment figures, you know, consciously saying those things, saying, endorsing violence.
Yeah, endorsing
and when
violence.
You endorse it, for you get to realize, like, there's a lot of people out there that are on the edge. You know, they've got anxiety, they've got stress. They, you know, may not be particularly well-schooled on a lot of these issues. And when they hear a major figure, like the Speaker of the House,
right,
or one of the most successful pop music artists of our time, mm-hmm, or anchors of major news networks, not just explore, mm-hmm, violence, but specifically embrace
call for it. They're calling for it, you know. They're
you know, it's kind of like the Charlie Manson or situation or something like that. I mean, these individuals are prone to being influenced by these voices, mm-hmm, and they're going to be. It's hugely irresponsible. And by the way, that's like everyone knows that. If you're in this profession, I know. Like, it's no secret that the one thing you don't do is inspire behavior in people outside of the field that's going to be detrimental to the country. We can have agreements without that. And yet there's case after case of this thing. By the way, you mentioned dictator Donny Deutsch. People need to start taking to the streets. This is a dictator.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not question mark, period. What? I don't even understand the basis for that.
Well, he just talks evil every time he opens his mouth. I don't even pay attention. It's just ridiculous. Listen, we have a minute or two. We're, as always, running right out of time. But so what do we hope to gain? What let's talk about in the last minute or two we have. What is the job ahead? What do we got to do? And what's the end result come November 3rd? How concerned are you?
Well, we need to get these economies reopened where it's reasonable to do that. And encouragingly, got, millions of jobs have been created over the last few months. Another 1.4 million created in August. That's all positive. President's got to continue to make the case both for law and order and why he is the candidate to bring America back economically and continue to put up policy victories and communicate as he did in Pennsylvania earlier this week and as he did in Wisconsin, out around the country. And then let this all come down to early November define the type of nation we're going to have, because it's two very different visions.
Two very different visions. Yeah, we have our work cut out for us. You know that. I mean, we got our work cut out for us. It's going to be a boatload here, and we're going to be burning the oil over here at America Out Loud for sure. It's interesting times. You know, I've been saying historical times, but it also in many ways an exciting time to be alive if you think about it historically. But it's also a very scary time, and a lot of people understand the stakes. But, you know, the one thing to remind you all out there is this. Sometimes in our darkest moments, or those moments where you feel it's the weakest, can actually be a moment of strength. It can actually be a moment of opportunity where the nation does pull down for more and where Americans do see. And we have a history of that. I mean, liberty burns bright here for reasons. And that's what we have to believe and hope for and trust right at this very moment of time. So, my fellow Americans, I say now is a call to action. It's a time for all of us to rise. And as Michael and I were just talking about moments ago, this is the moment for we the people. It's not political leaders, it's not others. We the people must rise, and it's all called an election. It's coming up here quick. And we need to reach all of those people. Please again, invite your moderates, your independents, your Democrats to the platform, to our show here. And tell them they're welcome here to have a seat at the table. And we are open and love to talk to all these folks and get them to understand an American vision and the exciting times that are ahead. Thank you again, my fellow Americans, for being with us on the journey. It's time to get involved and get loud.